Now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
The Living Brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is examples of lives well spent or misspent. Each of my guests is discussing a life story that we can learn from, either for the good or for the bad. My first guest is the first goaltender to win back-to-back Stanley Cups, Vezina, and Conn Smythe trophies. He's in the Hockey Hall of Fame. He knows something about success. We discussed his book, Journey Through Risk and Fear. My second guest defined musical styles during the British invasion in the 1960s. He pioneered a sound that set Herman's Hermits apart from the other British rock bands. That style has an enduring legacy even today. We discuss Peter Noone's amazing life in music. My next guest is a senior financial writer for the New York Times. She's investigated corruption, fraud, and ripoffs her entire career, but nothing prepared her for what she learned about Bernie Madoff's crimes. We'll discuss the new untold facts she discovered from her book, The Wizard of Lies. And as always, if you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Diana B. Henriquez is a senior financial writer for the New York Times, where she's worked since 1989. She has previously been a staff writer for Barron's Magazine and a Wall Street correspondent for the Philadelphia Inquirer and an investigative reporter for the Trenton Times. In 2005, she was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize, and she won the George Polk Award, the Worth Bingham Award for investigative reporting, and Harvard's Goldsmith Prize for her 2004 series, Exposing Insurance and Investment Ripoffs on Young Military Consumers. She's the author of four books. Her latest book is titled The Wizard of Lies, Bernie Madoff, and The Death of Trust, in which she conducts exclusive in-prison interviews with Bernie Madoff. Welcome to the show, Diana. How are you today?
I'm terrific, Barry. Great to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you on the show. Thanks so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy. You're the first and only reporter to interview Bernie Madoff in prison. So I guess the first question on everybody's mind is Bernie Madoff remorseful for what he did?
And you're right. That was what I was looking for when I went in. How do you live with yourself, really, when you've committed a crime like this? I've got to say, Billy, I didn't see remorse as much as I saw denial. He's still very much thinking about this crime in a cerebral sort of way, dollars and cents and the math and the how much are people going to get back and how much did they make. And, as you know, there was the amount of personal havoc and tragedy that he created is almost incalculable. There were suicides among his investors. His own son committed suicide on the second anniversary of his own arrest. And so we have this vast human wreckage, and in the middle of it, this man who still seems to sort of see it just as a financial crime.
It's interesting, Diane. I mean, did Bernie Madoff really believe that he wouldn't be caught? And when what goes on in his head, did he think he could keep doing this indefinitely?
I asked him that. It's the question. I got a little frustrated with him. I said, how did you think it would end? It's a Ponzi scheme. There's only three ways out of it. That, you jump off a bridge, you go to prison for the rest of your life, or you fly off to someplace without an extradition treaty. And he said it never occurred to him to flee. He always seemed to think he would somehow get out of it. And my conclusion, Billy, is that the Ponzi schemer's imagination isn't tethered to logic by any means. if you can imagine committing a crime like this, I suppose we have to accept that you can imagine getting away with it somehow. He had a very chilling answer when I pressed him about how he thought it would end. He said, well, after 9/11 on Wall Street, he kind of let himself think, well, maybe that would happen again. Maybe there would be some terrible terrorist attack and all his investors and he would all be dead, and that's how it would end. It was actually quite a chilling image.
That's a very disturbing image. We're talking to Diana Henriquez, everybody, who is the only person to be in prison to interview Bernie Madoff, not once, but twice. And you visited him in prison at two different occasions. What changes did you see from the first meeting to the second meeting?
Well, the first meeting was, while he wasn't the man that we'd seen on the television cameras all during the excitement about his fraud, he was the man I had known on Wall Street before he became so famous. Pleasant, unprepossessing, very much put you at ease, and crisp. He had his own little agenda. His uniform was just natty, and his shoes were shined, and his belt buckle was shiny. when I saw him the following February, and we'd exchanged emails and letters and occasional phone call all through that fall, I saw him in February, and I was shocked at the deterioration. He was much, much thinner. His belt flap actually had to be like tucked under so it wouldn't be flapping in the breeze. He'd lost so much weight. He seemed very intense, very humorless compared to August. And even a button on his shirt was unbuttoned, and he didn't notice it until halfway through our interview. So he was a little rumpled and disheveled. I think he truly was blindsided, Billy, by the devastation his crime inflicted on his own family's life. I don't think he saw that coming. I think he somehow thought that if he would stand up, he would admit his crime, he would go to prison, and they would suffer financial hardship. Obviously, he knew they were all going to be financial ruined, but I don't think he expected that they would suffer such emotional damage, and his crime, of course, just blew this family apart.
Oh, delusion and denial. We're talking to Diane Enriquez, and Diane, you know, how did you land the interview? That's as a reporter, I'm curious about that.
Persistence. I just kept writing him. I started as soon as he was locked up here in Manhattan, and then continued when he was moved to federal prison in North Carolina. He wrote me back once and said, "I appreciate your request. I know your work, but I'm just not ready to do one now." So I kept at it. I sent him a letter every few weeks, every month or so, encouraging him to talk, explaining why it was important that history have as definitive an account of his crime as possible. And finally, at the beginning of last summer, I started to get some hints from his attorney that maybe it was going to work out. It took till the end of the summer before we could finally make it work. Why he picked me, why he decided to say yes to my request, I don't know. My theory is, first of all, I think he felt that my coverage and that of my colleagues at the New York Times had been very fair towards his family. But secondly, I think also he knew I knew him from before. So I wouldn't see just a crook. I would see who he used to be on Wall Street.
The whole of his life existence. We're speaking with Diane Enriquez, author of the book, The Wizard of Lies, Bernie Madoff and the Death of Trust. And what I found interesting about reading your book, Diana, is that you've uncovered some revelations that have not come to the public's attention yet. So let's review some of those revelations. The first one, which was surprising, as far back as 1962, Bernie Madoff had what he called, or what you call, a cash crisis, which turns out to be his first money-borrowing cover-up type scheme. Tell us about that, please.
It was. He was a very young man. He started his business when he was still a senior in college, so he was in his very early 20s. He started trading over-the-counter stocks, which at the time was a very primitive sort of market. It was just a broker with a telephone talking to other brokers trying to make trades. Some friends and members of the family entrusted him with some money to invest for them, and he very recklessly invested that money in newly issued over-the-counter stocks, which was highly speculative. They're kind of like the technology bubble stocks that we remember back in the 90s.
Sure.
So it was very reckless, and for these kinds of investors, well, the market hit an air pocket, and all those stocks were worthless. And rather than turn to those people and say, "Look, you know, I really screwed up. I lost all your money here," he covered it up. He bought their shares back at the price they'd paid for it. He borrowed money from his father-in-law to stay in business because that took all the money he had.
Wow.
And he never admitted it to those investors. So they thought that this young genius had navigated them through this incredibly turbulent market mini-crash without any losses. So it greatly enhanced his reputation.
Well, the beginning of the delusion and denial. And then, Diana, it was a feat that really baffled most observers was how Bernie Madoff didn't lose money in 1987 when the stock market crashed and it lost 25% of its value. What happened then? How did Madoff cover that up?
Well, his legitimate stock trading firm actually performed very well in that market. Many NASDAQ firms were shutting their doors, not answering their phones. The market really fell apart in that 1987 crash, and Madoff's legitimate firm did well. He actually had some bets in the market that made a little bit of money that day. So it looked on the surface like he was doing fine after 87, but in reality, some of his very biggest investors, his early investors who had hundreds of millions of dollars invested with him, got frightened in the aftermath of the 87 crash, and they wanted to take their money out of their Madoff accounts. Now, Madoff, when he talked with me about this in prison, became visibly angry about this. He felt that they had changed the rules on him, that they hung him out to dry, he said. That you know, they the understanding he had with them was that they would keep rolling their profits over, and suddenly they wanted these huge amounts of money back. Now, he denies that he started stealing to cover those withdrawals. I'm not sure I believe it. In fact, I'm fairly certain I don't. I think the evidence is that he was already operating the Ponzi scheme to some degree by about the mid-1980s, but certainly the 87 crash greatly intensified that cash crisis, and he survived it because there just that was when this huge flood of hedge fund money started to come in from the Caribbean, from Europe, from all over the world, really, and that became just an avalanche of cash during the 1990s that allowed him to survive this crisis.
Diana, I find it interesting that even as you were interviewing him in prison, he gets visibly upset about the people wanting to take their money out, as he put it, changing the rules. But really what he's saying is, those people had a lack of trust in me and they wanted to take their money out.
He said exactly that in a subsequent email to me, and he caught himself in the email. I mean, he was complaining about, you know, the fact that he couldn't trust these people. He had trusted them, and they had betrayed him. And then he said, I guess it sounds a little funny for me to be saying something like that.
Well, at least he caught himself, and yes, I caught the irony of it right off the bat. I'm going to change gears, if I can, for just a little bit, Diana, and talk to you about the overriding market and that he's operating in. And with interest rates at their historic lows, investors are in a race for returns, and is really Bernie Madoff's greed, is it a disease or is it just a symptom of investors searching for higher returns with no questions asked?
Well, I think we all want those higher returns, and you're right. This is a particularly vulnerable period in which I expect we're going to see many more Bernie Madoffs stepping forward and saying, listen, I can give you a little bit more. They're going to be smart. They're not going to say, I can pay you a lot more than you can get at the bank. They're going to say, I can pay you a little bit more, nice and safe. And that's going to be the seductive come on for the next Madoff scheme, because Madoff didn't really exploit people's greed. There were many times when he wasn't the best paying investments you could have. He certainly was never the best paying hedge fund you could have gotten into. But what he promised you was consistency. You could sleep well at night. You were always going to get this regular, consistent return. And people are hungry for that kind of yield. And when yields are low like they are now, that message is going to be increasingly enticing to investors. And it's critically important that they learn the lessons that I've tried to lay out here with the Madoff story, that Ponzi schemers, they don't wear a set of horns and a big sign on their back saying, be careful of me. In fact, they're not always even the most charming, charismatic person in the room who might kind of raise your little bull feather detector signals. Madoff was a very calm, reassuring man. He didn't act like the smartest guy in the room. He acted like you were the smartest guy in the room, and that's a very seductive approach. I have to believe that other Ponzi schemers have learned some lessons from watching Madoff's success.
No doubt about it. It is a textbook for how to run a Ponzi scheme. We're talking to Diana Henriquez, everybody, author of the book, The Wizard of Lies, Bernie Madoff and the Death of Trust. And I guess, Diana, we worked very hard to get that interview. It was a back-and-forth exchange. You finally got it. But why does Madoff want to explain himself now after decades of deception, number one? And number two, why should we believe him?
Well, I think he wants to explain himself in part because it's such a relief to not be covering it up anymore. I mean, here's a man who kept a secret from even his nearest and dearest for at least 16 years, and I suspect even longer than that in my theory, and now he doesn't have to pretend about that anymore, so perhaps that's part of it. He can talk with some degree of relief about life. He still has a lively interest in what's happening in the market. The emails I get from him show that he's following current events very much. I don't I don't understand what he expects to get out of it. I think he wants to be better understood. Now, in that regard, he and I agree. I want people to understand him better because I want them to be able to protect themselves against the next Bernie Madoff.
No, that's a very good point. Now, looking at your book, Diana, what do you want readers to take away from reading The Wizard of Lies?
I want them to understand how seductive this idea of finding somebody to keep it simple for you can be. Part of Bernie's power was that all of us were kind of overwhelmed by how complicated investments had become. And we didn't have the time to do the homework, and we didn't have the time to study the fine print. And here was this very reassuring man who said, I'll keep it simple. I'll take care of it for you. And I hope all of us will take away a sense of that those really are the most dangerous words you can hear. Let me take care of it for you. We have to take personal responsibility for understanding our investments. And if that means that we just stay in nice, safe things we understand, like mutual funds and bank accounts, so be it. We have to live within our own risk tolerance.
Well, very sound advice. We've been talking to Diana Enriquez, everybody. Her book, The Wizard of Lies, Bernie Madoff and the Death of Trust. Diana, if people are really intrigued by what you're telling them and want to learn more about some of the new facts that you've uncovered, where would you direct them to go on the Internet to learn more?
Well, I hope they will go to my website, which is DianaBHenriquez.com. You can also type in The Wizard of Lies on Google, and I'm sure it'll help you find me.
Oh, that is great. Diana, it has been a real enlightening conversation. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you, Billy.
Thank you.